This is a special edition of the Here and Now podcast. I'm Jeremy Hobson. One of the most powerful men in Washington is the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. A Republican of Kentucky, McConnell has drawn ire not only from Democrats, but from Republicans who see him as the consummate Washington insider, although he's been very successful at achieving Republican goals. So let's zoom in on Mitch McConnell's career with Paul Kane, senior congressional correspondent and columnist for The Washington Post. I started our conversation by asking Paul Kane about what got Mitch McConnell involved in politics in the first place.
So Mitch McConnell grew up as a son of the South in a small family, only child. He had polio. And his father was off in fighting World War II, and his mother brought him to the Roosevelt compound in Warm Springs, Georgia, where he, you know, learned how to overcome polio. It was sort of the beginnings of what he would call the long game. And as a polio survivor, he wasn't a great athlete. He wasn't completely disabled. And basically at a really early age in high school, he had the political bug. He knew back then that he wasn't the most popular kid, and he developed what would be something, a hallmark that would stay with him well into his 70s. It was all about tactics. He won his high school class presidency not by making the biggest promises or having the best vision for what would happen to the school. He just knew exactly how to campaign better than anybody else and put together a campaign in which he went around to all the most popular cheerleaders and all the most popular jocks in the high school and got them to endorse him. And then he made up these endorsement sheets, almost like a whip card that you'd see in the Senate today. And it just had a list of all the popular people endorsing Mitch McConnell. And he walked around slipping these inside the locker of people. It was a really big high school back then from grade 7 through 12, he once told me. So the 7th, 8th, and 9th graders really didn't know any of the upperclassmen. But they got these cards that said, you know, captain of the football team endorses Mitch McConnell for class president. And boom, who won class president? Mitch McConnell.
So he figured out how to win elections. What was it that drove him when it comes to issues?
Issues were always a bit flexible early in McConnell's political career. By the time he got to the University of Louisville and became an intern in the Senate, he was interning for John Sherman Cooper, who was a moderate Republican who worked closely with President Kennedy, who fought very much on the side of the Civil Rights Act. So McConnell's early instincts were actually fairly moderate by today's standards on all of sort of the hot button issues when it came to things like civil rights and abortion. Eventually in 1969-70, he comes to the Senate working for a Republican senator named Marlo Cook. Cook was the Judiciary Committee Republican, and Cook was also given the sort of task by the Nixon White House as being the main supporter of his Supreme Court nominees. And those two were very controversial, and Democrats put up a huge fight and eventually defeated both of them. And it was a sort of searing moment in McConnell's life. He ends up writing a University of Kentucky Law Review article all about how we shouldn't be looking at too much of the politics of these nominees. It's a viewpoint that back in 2016, when McConnell had basically put a blanket hold on Merrick Garland,
right,
for very political reasons, it seemed a bit at odds with Mitch McConnell of the early 1970s. But those are his views back then. He then ends up in the Nixon Justice Department in a period of life that, I'll be honest, he has kind of washed it out of his biography. He then, by about 1975, heads back to Louisville full-time and decides it's time to get into politics. And he won his first big race in 1977.
And then he got to the Senate when?
He gets to the Senate in 1984 on the coattails of Ronald Reagan, running against an incumbent Democrat, targeting the incumbent Democratic senator as sort of aloof, nowhere to be found, on junkets. And he brought out bloodhounds. His ad maker brought out bloodhounds and were sort of running around Kentucky in this famous ad searching for the incumbent senator. And that helped propel McConnell to what was considered an upset win then, because, you know, the South had still not fully transformed at the Senate, congressional, local level. So he was part of sort of a minority of Republicans from the South at that point in 1984.
One of the issues that he's been very consistent on over the years is campaign spending limits. He has long opposed legislation on that. Here he is speaking out against a constitutional amendment proposed in 2014, which would have allowed Congress and states to set limits on raising and spending in campaigns.
But the political nature of this exercise should not obscure how shockingly bad this proposal is. This is embarrassingly bad to be advocating for the first time in our history, that we amend the First Amendment to restrict the rights of citizens to speak.
Why is this issue so important to him?
There are only a few real core issues that have stuck with him, and this is one of them. He believes that he is a proud defender of the First Amendment. He believes that political speech is unlimited, completely protected, and anybody at any price should be allowed to speak it. And it rubs people the wrong way because you end up having a corporation or a super rich person who can dwarf what the average person can spend for his or her political speech.
McConnell is very opposed to term limits for lawmakers as well.
Yes. And again, I think he would believe that that fits into this sort of same vein of consistency. I think he believes that there are, in a perfect world of free speech, anybody can say anything they want about a senator within the law, and you either vote him out or you vote him back in, and that the voters there are the ultimate check on term limits.
One of the things that Mitch McConnell got a lot of attention for in the early years of President Obama's first term was that he said, and he was minority leader in the Senate at the time, he told the conservative magazine, The National Review, that the single most important thing that he wanted to achieve is for President Obama to be a one-term president. Later, he clarified his position to the right-wing Heritage Foundation. Let's listen.
Over the past week, some have said it was indelicate of me to suggest that our top political priority over the next 2 years should be to deny President Obama a second term. But the fact is, if our primary legislative goals are to repeal and replace the health spending bill, to end the bailouts, cut spending, and shrink the size and scope of government, the only way to do all of those things is to put someone in the White House who won't veto any of these things.
While McConnell may not have succeeded in that goal of keeping Obama to one term, how did his strategy of opposition to President Obama work out for him and the Republican Party?
Very early on, he looked around and they had only 40 senators. And he made this political calculus that if he could hold all 40 of his Republican men and women together, that would put all the pressure on the Democrats to get all 60 of their votes. And it then makes every single Senate Democrat the deciding vote on a big issue. And that is exactly how it played out on what Republicans derisively call Obamacare. You know, and Democrats and Harry Reid in particular, the majority leader of the time, thought this was a viciously cynical strategy. But it made the law almost delegitimized as a purely partisan exercise, passed by 60 Democrats and opposed by 40 Republicans. And that was essentially the political goal, was to put all the heat on Democrats and then make almost all of their legislation feel as if it was a Democratic-only exercise, and so that if the public had recoiled at anything, they would be recoiling at the Democrats. And that's pretty much how the 2010 midterm elections unfolded, as the unemployment was up around 10% for most of 2010. And the public just got angrier and angrier. And the backlash snapped into effect when Republicans swept in and won a huge House majority and picked up almost six seats in the Senate, not quite getting to the majority, but setting the stage for Republicans to eventually win back the majority in the Senate.
And when they did, they were able to do the next thing that I want to talk to you about, which you've mentioned, which is stop Merrick Garland, President Obama's nominee for the Supreme Court, from getting to the court. Let's listen here to Mitch McConnell bragging about doing that at a 2016 campaign event in Kentucky.
One of my proudest moments is when I looked at Barack Obama in the eye and I said, Mr. President, you will not fill this Supreme Court vacancy.
And then, as we know, last year, McConnell ended the filibuster for Supreme Court selection and made it so that Republicans could get Neil Gorsuch into that seat on the court with just a majority of votes, 51 votes. So did he have any misgivings about that? Was he worried about changing that rule forever in the Senate for Supreme Court nominees?
No. You look again, his autobiography is called The Long Game, and he's used that phrase, one of the proudest moments, over and over again, whether it was in private, whether it was in interviews that I had with him. He basically looked at that decision to block the Garland seat and then ultimately filling it with Neil Gorsuch as the defining moment of his career that he did for the conservative movement writ large. And he felt that the open seat that there was there on the Supreme Court throughout the fall of 2016 helped drive out conservative turnout for Senate Republicans and probably helped elect Donald Trump president, which then led to the nomination of Neil Gorsuch. And at that point, McConnell was going to do whatever it took to complete this three-part act. And he basically looked back at 2013 and that Harry Reid and Democrats had unilaterally changed the rules for all judicial nominations except for Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. And once he had all Republicans pretty much on board to support Gorsuch, he felt like it was an easy move to change the rules. And you had from Cruz to Collins, Ted Cruz to Susan Collins supported Gorsuch. And that's the entire wingspan of the ideological divide in that caucus. He felt like he could do it, and he just went ahead and rammed it through and confirmed Gorsuch on a simple majority vote, something that wasn't possible a few years earlier.
What about Mitch McConnell's relationship with President Trump? He has sparred with the president at times. Here's an example of a not-so-subtle dig against the president's position on the status of DACA recipients.
I'm looking for something that President Trump supports, and he's not yet indicated what measure he's willing to sign. As soon as we figure out what he is for, then I would be convinced that we were not just spinning our wheels going to this issue on the floor, but actually dealing with a bill that has a chance to become law and therefore solve the problem.
What do you think of Mitch McConnell's relationship with President Trump?
The relationship is built almost entirely on winning or losing. When they're winning, as they were in the spring of 2017 with the confirmation of Gorsuch, the relationship was great. At that same time, Paul Ryan and House Republicans were struggling to repeal the Affordable Care Act, and that relationship was terrible. And Trump was both saying things publicly and tweeting bad things about Ryan. Later in the summer, after the House Republicans did actually pass a bill repealing Obamacare, the Senate failed in 2017. And that led to that sparring, Jeremy, that you're referencing throughout August of 2017. Trump was both tweeting and saying things about McConnell, mm-hmm. about he was weak, that he couldn't get things done. And because he was losing, therefore, Trump really didn't like him. But then in the fall, they put together massive tax cuts, $1.5 trillion and counting in tax cuts, and they got it through both the House and Senate relatively smoothly compared to the terrible rocky ride of trying to repeal the ACA. And that put the relationship back on a strong footing where, okay, we're winning now. We understand we're winning. And ever since then, they haven't been quite winning as much, and not on big legislation, but they're doing things that are slightly, slowly but surely advancing the conservative cause, and they feel like things that Trump can claim wins on, and therefore their relationship has been okay. They're never going to be personal friends. These are two people that are just diametrically mm-hmm. different. You know, Trump is just all emotion and impulse, and McConnell is all entirely analysis and cerebral thought. You know, these two would not really enjoy dinner together. And especially over these like well-done burgers and steak that right. Trump would be getting, as McConnell is more prone to just sort of go to his local Mexican restaurant on Massachusetts Avenue on Capitol Hill and have just a quiet tacos. Mm-hmm. But their relationship for now has been working, and especially on Supreme Court matters, Trump seems to really trust McConnell. And, you know, he delivered that big win on Gorsuch, and so that really helps that helped make this process leading up to Kavanaugh much easier, much smoother because of that.
It's interesting, though, that even though Mitch McConnell has been so successful in getting the conservative agenda through, that there are a lot of Republicans, especially on the right, who really dislike him. And I want to listen here to this candidate in West Virginia who was running for Senate there on the Republican side. He didn't win, but listen to one of his ads that ran on television.
Swamp Captain Mitch McConnell has created millions of jobs for China people. While doing so, Mitch has gotten rich. In fact, his China family has given him tens of millions of dollars. Mitch's swamp people are now running false negative ads against me.
I mean, there's so much there. This is Don Blankenship. He's saying China people, by the way. Mitch McConnell
yes.
is married to Elaine Chao, who is currently the transportation secretary and is of Asian descent. But what about the political opposition from Republicans for Mitch McConnell?
McConnell, because of this incredibly laconic, seemingly laconic outward demeanor, has never been a favorite of conservatives, especially of this era's conservatives who view emotion as their chief ideological marker, anger, the just pure raw emotion. And that's what Trump really tapped into. McConnell is this completely just withdrawn character who doesn't get very emotional, who doesn't talk loudly, who doesn't shout. And the conservatives have never trusted him because of that. And some of it is this ideological drift where he's moved in and out of issues. At one point in his early career, seemingly was pro-choice, or at least moderately pro-choice, and has moved into pro-life issues. So the conservatives have had this a little bit of a ideology issue and a lot of emotional restraint toward him. And it has made him this rare character in which he is both hated by the left. The left cannot stand Mitch McConnell and believes that he is the most effective conservative, ruthless, cheating conservative you could ever imagine. And then you have this far right group who think that he's a rhino, that think that he's a squish and that he doesn't get enough done. These two visions of Mitch McConnell are competing all the time and clashing, and they are just so far apart that it is really one of the most unique things about him, especially when you compare him to like other congressional leaders, people like Nancy Pelosi or Harry Reid, who by the time they had been around 6-8 years, they were loved by their base and just hated by right. everyone else.
And yet Mitch McConnell's been able to hold on to power all these years.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of the Senate for McConnell's sake anyway. I mean, the Senate is very much a club. It's a unique club, and you have anywhere from 40 to 60 people who are your constituents. And McConnell has done a better job of maintaining his relationships with those Senate Republicans who hold the key to his job. Mm-hmm. And they have always understood and respected him. They don't go to many dinners with him. And if they do, it's a quick fundraiser, and McConnell is in and out in about 15 minutes. But Mitch McConnell is the guy who raises money for them. Mitch McConnell takes all these bullets for them from the hard right and from the far left. And, you know, he doesn't seem to care or mind about that. And McConnell raises tons of money for the Senate Republicans. And so ultimately, they look at him, his fellow Republicans, and they think, well, nobody else can do this nearly as good as Mitch.
That's Paul Kane, who is senior congressional correspondent and columnist for The Washington Post. Paul, very interesting. Thank you so much for joining us.
Anytime, Jeremy.